You are listening to the Heavenly Chi podcast, episode number 80. Today, Jack and I are joined by Michelle Smith. And Michelle is a practitioner in Queensland who is going to talk to us all about setting up a business from scratch. Welcome, Michelle.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Michelle. So as we understand, you're really passionate about helping practitioners to shift from feeling like the kind of overworked technicians and into empowered business owners, which is kind of why we have you here today to talk about everything involved with building a thriving Chinese medicine practice, from brand DNA to your strategy-first thinking kind of ideas. Tell us a little bit about how you came to Chinese medicine and what that transition was like for you from your marketing career previously.
Yes. So my background before Chinese medicine, I was a corporate marketer. If we go way, way, way back to when I was in high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do when I left school. My dad said to me, well, if you're living here at home and you're not going to university, you have to pay board. But if you're going to university, you don't have to pay board. And all I wanted to do was travel. So I thought, all right, so I can go to uni, put a degree on HEX, so not really have to pay for it. And then I don't have to pay my dad board. And then I can work at a pub and earn money and go traveling. So my boyfriend at the time, his dad owned an advertising agency, and he just said to me, Michelle, you do great in marketing. That was it. You do great in marketing. You're great at talking to people. You're great at building relationships. So I just started a business degree. I didn't really have any drive or passion or real reason to do it other than the fact I wanted to travel the world. I didn't want to pay my dad rent. So I started a business degree, and I'm so grateful that I did that, because it's just been an amazing foundation, amazing building block for my career and how my career has unfolded in so many different ways. So I did my business degree. I ended up adding a double degree. So I did a Bachelor of Business. I majored in PR, and then a Bachelor of Media and Communications. And that was from QUT here in Brisbane. The reason why I added on the media communications was because I wanted to go to California and study in the US for a semester, but I didn't have enough units left on my degree. So me being a type A overachiever, I just said, oh, well, I'll just do a double degree so I have more study to do, and then I can spend a longer amount of time in California. So I graduated from my business degree. The day that I submitted my final assignment was a Thursday. And on the Friday, I was on a plane and I moved to Dubai. And my gap year after that business degree was to work as a flight attendant for Emirates. And I traveled the world. I got to have a crash course in building relationships really quickly with people, because every time you go on an airplane, you've got a new flight crew and you have to build relationships in order for that 16-hour flight to LA to go smoothly. So my experience at Emirates was really, really formative for so many reasons, but really building relationships quickly, it was probably my biggest learning from that experience. As soon as I started flying, I realized I was a terrible flight attendant, and I didn't love the job. I knew I was never going to be there long term. So as soon as I was in Dubai, I started networking, forming relationships with people that were in business, in marketing. And I ended up working in a social media agency where our clients were people like Etihad, like the Abu Dhabi Tourism Board, ex-Dubai, which was the Crown Prince's tourism business. So I started kind of carving out a niche for myself in the travel industry. I then ended up moving in-house and became Flight Centre's marketing manager in the UAE. And I'm like 24, right? And I'm reporting to the managing director. I'm having meetings with like really senior people, and I'm super young. I'm managing a team. And so you can start to build this picture of like a type A overachiever, burning the candle at both ends, go, 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 go. And that went on for years. And I went to Lebanon for a long weekend. We had a bank holiday. So I went on a long weekend and I got really sick. And I ended up getting back from that trip with Epstein-Barr virus, so glandular fever. And I had to take 6 weeks off work. I was exhausted, absolutely exhausted. The doctors didn't know what was wrong with me. My GP, who is Australian, ended up calling me and apologizing weeks later once she'd received my blood work back, because she said to Michelle, I just didn't take you seriously, but now looking at your bloods, you are so, so ill. And so that spell of being really sick and having those 6 weeks off turned into chronic fatigue. On the back of that, I had PCOS. I had zero connection to my body. I had chronic acne. I was exhausted. I was an anxious, nervous wreck. Now that I have all of my TCM skills, I know what I was going through at the time. But at the time, I was just completely lost. My GP said to me, Michelle, the only advice I have for you now is to move to the countryside for a year and rest. And I was like 25 or something at the time. And I thought, I can't do that. I've got, you know, dreams to achieve. I want to have this like very, very clear dream of where I wanted to go in my corporate career. And my mum came to Dubai and my mum visited me. And she took one look at me and she said, honey, you look dreadful. I want you to go see an acupuncturist. And I remember saying to her, Mum, you're a hippie. I don't want to do that. I don't want this natural medicine stuff. Because my mum, I call her like the original wellness influencer, like way back when. She's been doing all this stuff that like influencers think is like new and cool and they're being so innovative. Like my mum was doing that when I was growing up. So my mum said to me, I'll pay for 6 acupuncture sessions for you. Because she knew the benefit of getting acupuncture regularly, and she just knew that I didn't prioritize it yet. So I asked around, I found an acupuncturist in Dubai, and I started getting acupuncture from this amazing woman. And she just changed my life around. I had energy, my skin cleared up, I came off the pill, I finally had a real period for the first time in my life, and the only way to describe it, and I'm sure people know the feeling that I'm talking about, but I became myself again. I was so disconnected from myself, and this acupuncturist really brought me back home to myself again. And I would leave my stressful job. By this stage, I'd been headhunted to go back to Emirates and working in their corporate comms team. So I had my dream job. My dream job meant that I was crying in the car park every day before going into work because it was just so stressful and so demanding. So I'd leave my job and then go to my acupuncturist's office, and she was just calm and serene. And I looked at her and I said, is this your job? Like, do you just come to work and you help people feel better? She was like, yes, you know, it is. And she started lending me books. So she'd lend me, you know, The Web That Has No Weaver. I'd go home and I'd read that. And then the next week she'd give me Between Heaven and Earth. I'd go home and read that. So all these Chinese medicine books. And then one day I said to her, hey, I'm thinking of studying Chinese medicine. What do you think? And she was so encouraging. And I still email her to this day. And she was so encouraging of me studying Chinese medicine. And I'm so grateful that she was. So I remember it was like 2 a.m. I was at my tether with my career, and I enrolled online for the Southern School. And within a few months, I was packing up my life in Dubai and moving to Melbourne and starting my Chinese medicine journey.
What a great story. I love hearing all of that, you know, you were so ambitious and had this whole alternate life that was laid out in front of you, and you closed the door on it and just went, you know what, it's not compatible with who I am and how my body works. And yeah, I love it. I love it.
And I think that was it. I remember having, I call it my come to Jesus moment, when I was at a boardroom table, and I'm talking the most senior people, like the DSVP of Corp Comms, like the most senior people, the people that I would aspire to have their career one day. I just remember looking down this boardroom table and thinking, I don't want it. Like, I don't, if this is, this is my trajectory. I want out, because I knew that I wanted to create a career for myself that supported my health, that allowed me to live my life in a healthy way, not detract from it. And then the bonus is I then get to help other people with theirs.
That's so awesome. I really love that. I'd love to know, like, because I know a lot of us, myself included, albeit from a very different background, have come to Chinese medicine from something else.
Mm.
And we've, a lot of us can relate to that. A lot of us can relate to that kind of come to Jesus moment that you're talking about. What was it like for you to kind of have that all made? Because I don't think, like, I know I certainly didn't have like a pristine seeming life. Not that it's necessarily like that for you, but I wouldn't have said that I was coming from a place of pretty like wild, objective or outward success. What was it like for you to leave that behind? What was the internal experience of that like for you?
Yeah, great question. I was living in Dubai. When you say Dubai, people immediately think of money, of opulence, and I had a really unique experience in Dubai. My partner at the time was local, so he was born and raised in Dubai. His parents, or he is Emirati, and he came from immense wealth. And he was beautiful. We had a really beautiful, beautiful, beautiful connection. But he came from immense wealth. Like, I'm talking like a very affluent background. But I could see that there wasn't a lot of freedom in that for him. And I'm so grateful for that experience, because I learned very early on in life that money enables you freedom and opportunity. But I had that experience that I didn't want that at the expense of my own personal freedom, or at the expense of different things that I wanted to do in my life. So when I walked away from that lifestyle, I was walking away from my partner. I was walking away from my career, but I was being drawn to something that felt so much bigger. But I also think, having come from a career where I was getting paid tax-free money in Dubai, and I was getting paid well, my mindset since becoming a Chinese medicine practitioner is, well, I've just left a career, gone back to study Chinese medicine, which, if you're doing herbs, is essentially a 5-year uni degree. Why should I then get paid less money than when I was working in marketing? If I'm delivering more value as a human, if I'm helping people fall pregnant, helping people live pain-free, why would I go backwards in terms of how much money I make? So that's always just been my philosophy. And then when I talk to other practitioners, I think it becomes evident that unfortunately not everybody thinks like that, but I hope that it's changing.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, and it's, you know, the idea that we should be paid well to reflect the value that we contribute to society. And I wholeheartedly agree with you. And I'm curious to know, what was your experience when you were studying? Because you'd come from financial abundance prior to mm-hmm. studying Chinese medicine, and that you had this idea, presumably come, you know, it came with you from your previous career, and you wanted to continue that with your Chinese medicine career. How did you notice the way in which you were taught and the things that were either said or unsaid explicitly yeah. or implied about your ability to earn money as a Chinese medicine practitioner and your ability to be financially abundant as a practitioner?
Yeah. I will still remember this conversation. So when I came back to study, I was still working in marketing in Melbourne. But I knew, and this is probably an insight into how my brain works from a relationship building, networking, business perspective. I knew that when I graduated as a Chinese medicine practitioner, I needed a network. I needed a group of people that were already in my network, in my community, so that when I became a Chinese medicine practitioner, they would say, yes, cool, I'll become your client. And so about a year into, no, not even a year, I essentially started teaching yoga within 6 months of studying Chinese medicine. And my whole intention for teaching yoga was to build out a community of people that were used to me in a wellness setting. It was also for me to touch bodies, to understand bodies, see movement patterns in action and things like that. And so when I was in my final year, a teacher at uni said that no one would be making more than, I think he said, 50 or 60 grand in their as a TCM practitioner in their first year out. And I remember saying to him, well, I'm earning 80K a year as a yoga teacher right now and studying full time. So why would I go backwards as a Chinese medicine practitioner? If as a yoga practitioner, I'm already exceeding that, there's no way I'm going backwards. And so there was that culture of, you know, you won't earn a lot of money. I had another student at uni tell me that if I made money as a first year acupuncturist, that I was being unethical. And that was from another student, not even a practitioner. And I think I've come up against that oftentimes where people have maybe a particular impression of me or thought of me. But the reason why I do sort of advocate for us to be earning a living wage is that I know when my needs are being met, I can show up as the most generous practitioner to my patients. And when I'm showing up as the most full, embodied, energized, generous version of myself, my patients are getting the best of me and they're getting the best results. So who am I to not show up to my patients in that way? But for me to do that, I need to ensure that my needs are being met, that I've got a house, that I feel safe, I've got psychological safety. All of those things are so important. And we live in a capitalist world that comes with money.
Absolutely. Wow. So interesting to hear that the same conversations and the same ideas are perpetuating, you know, more than two decades after I finished my study, where those conversations were happening, you know, like we were having conversations when I was in my final year of practice around, you know, where are you going to practice? How much are you going to charge? And I remember saying, well, this is how much I want to charge. And people were jaw-dropping, saying, you can't do that. How can you charge more than this person or more than that person? They've got more experience than you. And how dare you charge more than them? And I remember thinking, well, I can charge whatever I like as long as I feel congruent that I'm providing value that matches or exceeds that amount. Then,
yeah,
of course I can charge that.
Yeah. I say that all the time. At the end of the day, when I put my head to the pillow at nighttime, if I still have my sense of integrity and I know that I've been living in alignment with my values, I know that I've done everything I can for my patients. Like that's all that matters to me. And people, if you're delivering value, they're happy to pay for that service that you're offering.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I wonder how different it would be if the universities, instead of saying things like you'll never make money or, you know, nobody ever makes money in Chinese medicine, imagine if they said, we're going to bring in for you some guest speakers who have made good money in this industry, yeah, and they're going to share with you some of the ideas around how to do that.
Yeah.
It'd be such a game changer.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting. My clinic, so OVA, which is my clinic in Brisbane, we have myself and four other practitioners. Zoe is on maternity leave at the moment, so she'll be coming back later this year. And I hired a grad who she graduated in February this year, so she's been practicing now for 3 months. She's fully booked. She sees probably 40 patients a week, and she has just taken the opportunity and run with it. And I remember at the end of last year having a conversation about her, you know, maybe working at a nursery or a health food store. And I was flabbergasted. And I said, there is no way. Like, you have just completed all of this study. What makes you think that you would need to do that? You know, you will start working, you will start getting great patient results, your patients will start sharing you, and you will have a full book. So yes, I think the unis need to do a lot more in, you know, motivating and inspiring students that they are entering a really fruitful career. But I also think there's an onus on us as clinic owners or practitioners or established practitioners to have some kind of mentorship or to have some sort of development within our own businesses, because I could have hired somebody with 10 years experience when I advertised for the role. I could have hired someone with more experience. But for me personally, I think because I haven't done all of this on my own, I've had my own mentors, and, you know, Kirsten Wolf has been so influential for how I've set up my business. That I think the onus is on me to then pass that on to, you know, the next generation of practitioners too.
I'd just love to say I'm noticing that I'm so excited hearing you talk about this right now. This is really resonating very deeply with me as someone who has also started relatively recently. And I'm kind of burning a bit to ask, when people are starting out, so for those of us who are, well, I guess like those of us who are starting out now or will be shortly in the future, or those of us who have been practicing, maybe been practicing for a while, maybe even quite a few years, and are not reaching that level of, I guess, success, but maybe even just not helping people as much as they would like to be, where, you know, maybe we do have to do feel like they need to compromise and have a second job or whatever. If you could boil it down, what are the key things that need to be there in order to get someone from seeing 2, 3, 4, 5 people a week to being fully booked within that 3-month period? Like, how do you do that?
You've got to be a good practitioner. So I'm pretty ruthless with my hiring process. I say to people when I hire, are you the best at what you do? And that question is asking them, you know, are you doing the best at what you do? Like, so are you showing up and doing your best each day? But it's also, are you the best at what you do? So I think being a fantastic practitioner is essential. You have to be getting results for your patients. So there's that aspect of it. I went through uni during COVID. I invested a lot of money in professional development in my first year out. I was doing every single Dung acupuncture course I could get my hands on. So I invested a lot in my craft in that first year out. The devastating thing is people are graduating from their uni degree having spent maybe 80, 90K and not feeling equipped. So in my case, again, because I was earning good money, I could invest that into my craft. So everything I earned in that first year, I reinvested in going to seminars, learning everything I could about, in my case, Dung acupuncture, because I had exposure to Dung acupuncture when I was in Taiwan during uni. So number one thing is you have to be a good practitioner. And then the second thing is mindset. And it's so cliche to say mindset, but your mindset is so critical. It's so critical as a practitioner, and to have that abundance mindset to feel, you know, capable, whatever it is. And I think for me, working with someone like Kirsten, working with someone like Amy Bell, who is, you know, an amazing change worker, has influenced my mindset. And the number one thing I do for my team is coach them on their mindset.
Oh, so let's go a little bit further into the mindset stuff, if that's okay. When you say you've got to have the right kind of mindset, what does that look like? How do you recognize that someone has the kind of mindset that's going to lead them to have the level of success that they're looking for, whatever that may be?
I mean, it's so layered. It really is having the commit. I think part of it is having a commitment to growth. And so having that commitment to constantly learning, constantly refining, getting better and better and better and better at your craft is a huge aspect of it. Having somebody around you who can expand your sense of reality. So, my prackie who started with me last year, I said, "How much money do you want to earn?" And they said, "Oh, maybe like 75K." And I said, "Cool. To own a house in Brisbane, the household income has to be 170K. So for you to get a mortgage in Brisbane, essentially, is they say that your household income will need to be 170K. I said, "Do you want to buy a house in the next 5 years?" "Yes." "Cool. You are not going to be able to buy a house if you're earning $75,000. So you need to understand what your needs are, what it takes for your needs to be met, and then we reverse engineer for how much money you need to earn." So having the mindset of, okay, well, how much money do I actually need to be earning? How much do I want to be earning? And then knowing that it's completely possible to have your needs met as well. And that takes a lot of inner work. Like for me to say that that's me going into my own limiting beliefs around money, growing up with a father who had a small business that he had to shut because he couldn't handle the stress of it. Like there's a lot of stuff in my childhood, in my background around limitations for working for yourself and financial goals and things like that I've had to work on. And then there's a lot of, what's the word when you're imposter syndrome? You know, you've done good work of getting rid of imposter syndrome when you don't remember what it's called anymore. But, I had imposter syndrome as well, like when I first graduated, of course. And it takes a few wins, you need to get a few runs on the board until you do feel really confident of like, oh, I am doing this, like people are falling pregnant, people are getting results. So having a few runs on the board to get over the imposter syndrome as well. But it's layered and it takes time and there is no end to the personal development stuff. They say like new level, new devil. Like each time you unravel a layer, you're like, oh, I got rid of those limiting beliefs. There's always some new ones around the corner. So I think the foundation of it is having that mindset of growth, learning, continually evolving and expanding as a practitioner, but also as a human.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great answer. Thank you for that. That's really, really cool. Where do you, I guess, along a similar vein then, having like a really clear idea of what it takes to get there, wherever there may be, where do you see other people going wrong? Like where are those of us who aren't getting there? What are we messing up? Where are we tripping over ourselves, and what can we do about that?
I mean, I want to preface this with meeting ourselves with grace and being compassionate and just honoring where you are. I see a lot of acupuncturists that are thinking of their business like an acupuncturist would think about a business instead of thinking of their business like a business owner or an entrepreneur would think about their business. So when I walk into OVA, I'm in practitioner mode. I don't look at my emails. I don't look at my Xero. I don't look at my marketing. I don't do anything. The moment I step into my shift at OVA, I am a practitioner. I'm fully present for my patients and I'm there in practitioner mode. I leave my shift as practitioner and I become the clinic director. And when I'm in the clinic director mode, that's when I'm thinking like an entrepreneur. I'm thinking about opportunities. I'm thinking strategically. And so I have very, very separate mindsets for those two states. So I do, to answer your question, I see acupuncturists thinking like acupuncturists and expecting to build a business thinking like an acupuncturist. If you want to build a business, you need to build a business thinking like a business owner. All I do is I listen to entrepreneurial podcasts, you know, like I'm listening to Daniel Priestley, I'm listening to Stephen Butler, like I'm listening to business and entrepreneurship podcasts constantly. And then of course I still do my TCM development, professional development, but it's not even an even split. I'm spending sort of 60 to 80% of my time on, understanding how to grow a business versus the Chinese medicine.
And I think that split is quite common among practitioners who have built abundant practices, and whether they're practicing as a solo practitioner or whether they have a group practice or a multimodality practice, the people who prioritize business learning and business growth, that seems to be a recurring theme from what I've seen all of the people I've interviewed over the years on Heavenly Chi, where they talk about, you know, bare minimum 50% of your CPD learning is business learning and learning how to be a better business owner in all of the ways that business owners need to show up. And even if you're not employing anyone, there's still lots of things that you need to do. And of course, when you are employing people, then you've got all of the HR stuff and all of the management and leadership stuff that comes along with it too. And the more you can build your business and build your clientele, the more people you can help. And so you get to practice your skills more as well, like on more patients when you are doing your skill-based learning and going to your TCM seminars, your acupuncture seminars, your herbal medicine seminars.
And I think that's it. I think one of the reasons why people potentially don't feel like they're getting on top of their craft is because they're not seeing patients. So people are typically shocked by how fresh I am as a practitioner, but I've been seeing 40 people a week since I graduated. So for the past 3.5 years, that's 40 people a week and sometimes up to 60 or more. And so it's having that, but you can only have that practice and you can only have, you know, repeat that skill if you've actually got patients coming in the door, which is why you need to focus on, you know, the brand and the marketing and the business side of things. So for the people that don't want to own a business and they're listening to this and they are actually, they just want to focus on being a practitioner and they don't want to deal with the marketing, they don't want to deal with the brand, they don't want to deal with all of those aspects, get a job at a clinic so you don't have to do all of those things. I think there's, for some people, there might be shame around just admitting that they don't actually want the business. And so my advice is if you don't want the business, find a clinic that is thriving where you can go into it. If you work at my clinic 2 days a week, you can see 40 people in a half shift and you're earning sort of 120, 130K a year. So you can, those clinics exist. And so my advice is if you don't want the business and you don't want to hold the pressure and all of the things that comes with it, there's no shame in not doing it and going and working at a clinic and being a clinic and being a practitioner in another person's clinic.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really important point. And it's something that's come up a couple of times actually with the practitioners that I've mentored, is that some people, whether it's a season of life that they're in where they don't have the bandwidth, they don't have the capacity for being a business owner, or whether they're just feeling like, you know what, I'm just not made out for this, or it's not really my jam, it doesn't make my heart sing to do all of this stuff, it is the best decision for those people most of the time to go and work in someone else's clinic rather than to be looking for an admin job or to be getting a weekend job working at a hardware store or, you know, all of these other types of hospitality jobs and fill-in jobs that people are used to getting as uni students or, you know, when they're younger. But when you're a qualified professional, getting work that matches your qualifications is the best thing to do. And as you say, like the hourly rate, if you want to think about it from that perspective, is so much higher. And you get to practice your skills and you get to work with patients and you get to do all of those things that we all signed up for when we learn Chinese medicine. You don't have to do the business side of things. And I love the way that you frame it up, that there's no shame in it. I agree with you. There is no shame in it at all.
Yeah. But I think the onus is on clinic owners to create clinics that are fertile ground for growth and development as for their practitioners, that they create clinics where their practitioners have psychological safety, have physical safety, they feel that, you know, they are valued and that all they really need to do is be good at their job. So at my clinic, I say to my practitioners, all you have to do is arrive at your shift, pour from a full cup, help your patients, treat from a place of love, and then you leave again. Outside of those hours, I don't want you to be stressing about your time at OVA. Your time at OVA is to fill your cup as, you know, your career cup and allow you, give you a living wage so that you can go in and enjoy your life outside of being in the clinic as well. And so I do think there's an onus on clinic owners to ensure that we are creating clinics that do create fertile grounds for our practitioners to earn a good living, to feel satisfied and fulfilled in their role as a practitioner. But I don't know that there are that many clinics truly that offer that.
No, and there is a lot more now than there used to be. When I graduated, there were zero opportunities. And in fact, I, you know, myself and Kirsten and one or two other places for, you know, if we go back in time 10, 15 years ago, we were the only places in Melbourne that were offering this type of opportunity. There was a handful of places in the rest of Australia. And apart from that, the only option was to start your own business.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was back in the day. It was before social media. It was before the internet. We were, you know, we were grinding the grind, getting businesses off the ground. It's very different nowadays.
Yeah. But
yeah. It's definitely something that I think is very worthwhile to encourage is people who do run successful practices and practitioners who do have that financial abundance to create opportunities and to create employment and create these spaces for practitioners to come and work for them. Yeah. I wonder what sort of words of encouragement would you have for those practitioners?
For practitioners working in a clinic or for clinic owners?
For clinic owners to create these opportunities for other practitioners.
I think I always ask myself, like, who do I want to be in the world? What do I want my legacy to be? And how do I want to be? And that is sort of like a guiding place for me. I have such immense pride in the employment opportunities that I create for my team. That is, for me, something that I'm very, very proud of. We have a full-time clinic manager role that's job shared between two beautiful, beautiful humans. I am so proud that I have built a clinic where they get to come and work and they have job satisfaction, they have job flexibility. You know, one's a young mum, the other one is hoping to start a family soon, and I I'm so proud that I've created a job for them that that pays them what they deserve to be paid, that, you know, I pay their super, like I take responsibility for all of those things, but that they can come to a place like Over and thrive. I'm very proud of the employment opportunities. So for me, and I'm very proud that my practitioners get are seeing a lot of clients and that they're busy and that they're getting good results and that they love working in the clinic. So for me, that's a point of pride. So for clinic owners, I think it's who do you want to be? Like what kind of legacy do you want to leave behind you? I was very, very fortunate enough to spend some time with Steve Clavey. And when Steve passed, I spent time reflecting on his influence on me and things that I had learned from Steve. And the one thing that I kept coming home to was that Steve taught me that this medicine isn't ours. It's not mine to cling on to. And so I just think I've been, for whatever grace of God or for whatever reason, I've learned Chinese medicine, like how, why, whatever, I don't know. But whatever reason, I've come to learn Chinese medicine and I've been gifted access to this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful medicine. It isn't mine to hold on to and to cling on to. And so that's been important for me in, I think, having a sense of generosity of how I want to share. I don't have decades long of experience like Steve did to share that aspect, but things that I can share is what I do have a lot of experience in, which is the business, which is the marketing, which is the growth and the coaching and that aspect of it. So for clinic owners, I think it is like, be really clear on like, who do you want to be in the world? What kind of person do you want to be in the world? What do you want to be famous for? I want people to think of me as someone who was generous, who was supportive, who was a cheerleader for other people. Like that's how I want to be known. So that's a big reason for the way that I run my business.
Love that. So great. Hopefully there's some practice owners and some clinic owners out there who may not already have someone on board and they may contemplate creating some jobs for other practitioners to come into.
And it makes your life so much easier. Someone asked me the other day about emailing a patient and I was like, oh, I didn't have emailed a patient in a year because you have the right support. And I think that's when, if we were to begin to talk about practitioner burnout, a lot of the practitioner burnout comes from the admin associated with seeing lots of patients, the emailing patients, the other stuff. It comes from not having a marketing strategy, feeling like you're always hustling and chasing clients and things like that. When you have the systems in place that actually has all of that sorted, that's when there is no practitioner burnout. You just come to work feeling inspired and excited that you get to treat and that you get to help people. And your business should hopefully be running in such a way that, you know, it's not creating stress and dis-ease.
I think that's a really important point to make, that regardless of whether you've got other practitioners as part of your clinic, absolutely having admin support makes all the difference, and it facilitates you being able to see 30, 40, 60, 100 patients a week, however many patients you want to see. And you can do that. And like you say, you come to work and you're in practitioner mode. You're not grinding gears of being practitioner and then you're taking payments and then you're rebooking patients and, oh, I've got to refill the tissue box is empty and the sharps container needs to be, like, all of those things don't need to be tabs open in your mind. They should be something that should be taken care of by your support team.
Yeah, absolutely. And it removes the decision fatigue. from your day, which is important, so that you can focus your attention on the things that really require your focus and attention. And I do think a lot of clinic owners see those support roles and admin roles as an expense. They're the best investment in my business, having those support roles there, the best investment that I could make in my business. In fact, for the business owners, the best investment that you can make in your business is your people.
100%. 100%.
I guess, like, on that note, you mentioned like having a good strategy is like quite important, right? What do you mean when you say you need a good strategy? Because I know, like, for myself, and when I was having a little bit of a sticky beak around some of the things that you offer and like your seminars and things like that, there's this idea around looking at your strategy before you look at tactics, and that like often will kind of start the wrong way around. How do you help people build that, and what is a good strategy, and how do you implement it, and all of those kind of bits?
Yeah, so being tactic first, being driven by tactic first, is Monday morning, getting to the clinic, opening up your book for the week, seeing that you don't have enough patients booked in, thinking, fuck, I need to do something to get some patients, and then getting out your phone, posting a random Instagram post on black sesames and why they're important for your kidneys in Chinese medicine, and posting that and thinking that you're going to get a patient. Or opening up and filming a reel about some ridiculous audio and you might be dancing or doing whatever and posting that. That is a tactic first approach to your business, where you think everybody else is creating social media content, therefore I need to create social media content. Shit, 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 shit. What am I going to do? I just need to post something. So Instagram is a tactic. And Instagram should be a channel where you execute on your strategy. So we have your business strategy and then your branding strategy. So you should have your business plan, and then you'll have your brand strategy document. And this is what I teach people, how to establish a brand strategy. And then with that brand strategy, you'll have whatever channels available to you to execute on that strategy. And that is, like, Instagram is a channel where you can execute your strategy. And you might be doing different things on different channels depending on who it is that you're trying to talk to. So an example would be this podcast is a channel for me to talk to practitioners about my branding seminar and the one-on-one coaching that I offer to people. The way that I'm using my language here is going to be very different to my Instagram, Michelle Smith Health, where I'm chatting to potential fertility patients. So I'm trying to communicate to them a very specific thing, which is that I'm very highly knowledgeable in fertility. I'm very approachable, and I'm showing them insights into what it would be like to work with me, versus Over Acupuncture, which has its own brand strategy, very separate to my personal brand strategy. So the one thing that I see people do is they don't have a strategy behind the content that they're producing. Over's brand strategy, I think the reason why Over was so successful so quickly was because the brand strategy was rock solid, and I didn't stray from it until I had to. And when I say I had to, the brand evolved. And so as the brand evolved, the strategy evolved. But for those first 12 months, our brand strategy was rock solid. I knew exactly who I was talking to. I knew the exact patients that I wanted to be walking in the door at Over. And everything I did was talking to that person. Instead of thinking, I swear a lot, I'm sorry, fuck, I need a patient this week, let's throw some pasta at the wall and see what's going to stick.
I can definitely relate to doing a lot of tactic first activity.
Yeah. But who are you to know? right? Like, I don't know your background, but I assume you don't have a business degree.
I do not.
You know, I'm sure you haven't spent years consulting. Like this is my background. You know, before coming into Chinese medicine, people would pay me. I would run million-dollar campaigns. So you know, meet yourself with grace if you've been doing that tactic first approach. But the opportunity is to learn a new way of doing things.
Which I guess comes really nicely back to the growth and learning mindset that you were talking about really early on, right? Because there is I know for myself, I've been fortunate enough to be around a lot of people who have really impressed upon me the importance of getting interested in and excited and invested in the business side of things. And I've found a lot more enjoyment in that and in this than I originally thought I would. But I'm also aware that a lot of us don't come to Chinese medicine thinking, oh, cool, I'm going to start a business. We come to Chinese medicine with a passion for the medicine, rather than the business ownership side of things. What do you think? Do you think, perhaps, do you think anything changes for people when they start to step into and own that business ownership, business owner persona, character, hat, identity? Like, do you think something shifts for people when they start to embrace this, and what if that does happen?
Yeah, 100%. I've seen people that attended the Know Your Brand seminar that I ran last November, and I've just seen the shift in how they approach their business. And I think it's a more empowered position as a business owner, where you think, oh, yeah, I can really initiate change in my business. You know, like this business isn't just happening to me. Like I'm the architect, I'm designing this business, you know. So I think it's really taking the driver's seat and saying, okay, well, no one's coming in here to save this business. Like there is no business fairy godmother who's just going to come in and make it all good. You have to do the work. And people attended my seminar and they got given the foundations and they don't do anything with it, which is fine. They might not be ready to do anything with it. But the people who come and they learn the tools, they understand it, and then they get to work and they actually do the work on their business. I'm seeing it. They're fully booked. They're doing so well on, you know, on their social media and growing their presence. So, but actually doing the work is the hard part. Like learning the skills is one thing, but then getting in and doing the work is another thing. And then another thing I wanted to say was I was a marketer and I learned how to become a Chinese medicine practitioner. So who are we to say that if you're a Chinese medicine practitioner, you can't learn to become a marketer? It's just a new skill set.
I love that. That's a great reframe. It's just another set. So it's just like learning a new acupuncture style in a way as well, isn't it? In some ways, like learning a particular acupuncture or a particular school of herbal medicine or
Yeah,
something like that.
100%. Yeah. And I think the other thing is, yes, I've come from a marketing background, but because I had become quite senior in my roles, I wasn't on the tools anymore when I left my marketing career. You know, I was in a strategy role and a leadership role, but I wasn't writing copy. I wasn't doing the thing. So I've been off the tools for a really long time. So in the last 2 years since opening over, I've had to get back on the tools, so to speak, where I am writing content and I am, you know, doing graphics in Canva and doing all of the things. But I have a mindset, and part of that is I've never ever worked in SEO, and I have this mindset in life that, like, life is a game. Different aspects of life have different rules, and you need to know the rules in order to play the game. And so when I opened Over, I thought, fuck, I don't really have money to spend on an SEO agency. And I didn't really want to spend the money on it. So I taught myself how to create a website with good SEO. And I asked ChatGPT, what do I need to know in order to create a website with good SEO? And that was a skill that I didn't have that I learned. And yes, I could learn it because I have a level of literacy when it comes to business and marketing, but that was a new skill that I dive deep into that I learned. And I don't use anyone for Over at the moment for any SEO or anything like that. That's just stuff that I've literally learned from ChatGPT.
And we've all got access to, you know, this fabulous tool. AI is such a game changer.
Yeah.
And for anyone who's listening, we're recording this. It's the 1st of May, 2025. You may be well into the future and listening to this recording. But if you're listening to it and it's 2025, you're not already embracing AI, you need to be embracing AI. People who are not using AI are already left behind. You are already left behind if you are not using AI. You can catch up, but all of your peers, everyone else who is out there, are using AI, and it's a tool just like any other tool that can make your life easier. That, as Michelle's just explained, she learned how to do SEO from ChatGPT, how to implement an SEO strategy for her website. So I definitely just wanted to put a little sidebar in there about AI. Whichever AI is your favorite AI, they're all fairly similar, but definitely do embrace it if you have not already.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and I love that as well, because and this actually will tie in quite nicely to something else I wanted to ask you, Michelle. One of the things I've found is super interesting with starting to like dabble with and tap into AI is you can ask it to do like all kinds of cool stuff, including helping you to organize and like streamline just different parts of your life. Like whether that be like, oh, I want to get X, Y, and Z done every week, and these are my like available times and these are my commitments, and it will create you a whole schedule for your week, or your month, or your day, or whatever it is. It's actually almost kind of limited only by what you have the audacity to ask it to do.
Yeah.
And so I guess like on that similar note, what you know, 'cause there are a lot of things potentially to juggle with getting something like a business set up. What do you think are the kind of like essential things to simplify, to keep the like passion alive and the momentum going, while also taking those steady steps forward in growing into wherever you want to be?
At the get-go, before you even open the doors to your clinic, you need to know what your values are. Because that will become your values will become your sort of guidepost for decisions that you make and how your business will grow and evolve. Because with Over, we became a very busy clinic very, very busy, very quickly. And had I not had those rock solid values and that really clear understanding of the kind of clinic we wanted to be, I genuinely think it could have spiraled and I could have lost hold of it. So I think, like, to answer your question, how do you sort of keep things streamlined? You want to maintain momentum, but I think having a really rock solid idea of the kind of clinic you want to be, the values, and infusing those values in absolutely everything you do is so critical for when you do hit that growth and you do start to expand. The way that you do things scales with that business growth, because what you don't want to happen is you don't really know who you are, and then when you start to get really busy, you're not really standing for anything. And I think that also influences the kind of patients you get through the door as well, because now Our values are so infused in everything that we do that it's very rare that we get patients booking at the clinic that aren't already on board with what we're doing, that aren't really our people. So having your values there from the get-go. And I think part of your question was, how do you keep the momentum going? It's still having that like growth mindset, like that, that idea of, you know, I believe we could study all day, every day, Chinese medicine, and at the end of our life, not know everything. And so I'm constantly pushing myself to learn new things, different things, and checking in with my practitioners. How are you feeling at the moment in your whole life? What are you working towards at the moment? How can OVA support you in your goals? So I'm checking with what my business goals are and what I'm working towards in order to keep my momentum going of my where I'm moving towards. But it's also checking with my team. Okay, are you happy seeing X amount of people? Where are you? What are your goals? What are you doing? And how can I help you to reach those? I think that's important in order to keep the momentum, but not lose sight of where you're going. So it's not just growing for the sake of growing, but having those values in place so that you know the reason why you're doing X, Y, and Z. And then I think as a business owner, my team trust the decisions that I'm making because they know that every decision I make for the business, I'm making that decision based on my values. So if I can tick off, yes, yes, this, yes, 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 and make that decision, my team trusts that I'm making decisions based on those values. So that helps from like a morale perspective as well, because there'll be shit times in your business. Like, you know, we obviously want to talk about the positive and like the success stories. But in the 2 years of having my business, you know, there's been some really tricky situations that you've had to manage, that I've had to manage. And so that's why having your values to kind of fall back on is so important.
Solid foundations. I really like that. That's very, very helpful, actually.
Yeah, 100% solid foundations.
Michelle, would you be comfortable sharing one of those tricky times and how you were able to overcome it?
I won't share the trickiest. Oh, sorry. The main one that comes to mind, I'm not sharing purposefully, but yeah. What's another one? Nothing's coming to mind, Claire. Sorry.
That's okay. It's hard because we're in an industry where everyone's going to know.
Yeah, exactly. That's why.
Yeah, hard to be discreet.
Yeah, exactly. We're a small industry, but Brisbane is an even smaller town, so... so I won't share that. And that's probably the toughest thing. If I think of something, then we can come back to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, how about this then? If you could give one piece of branding or business advice to someone that's just starting out, what would that be? And also, what's one piece of advice you think that they should completely ignore that they're likely to have been told or encountered before?
So the advice that you should ignore is so much of the stuff that we're targeted in branding and marketing is built for retail businesses or e-commerce businesses. So we're being, a lot of people will buy programs or buy templates or buy business coaching from someone from the retail industry or from e-com. And it just doesn't work for us. And so I see people that are employing e-com strategies to a values-based service like Chinese medicine, and it's just a complete mismatch. So my recommendation is to not fall prey to very, very, very smart marketing funnels that are designed to get you in and thinking that you need those templates or you need that strategy course or whatever it is. But it's actually coming from an industry that is totally different to ours, because in allied health, it's very specific. The marketing and branding within allied health needs to be very specific because we're doing a very specific thing. So my piece of advice of like what to avoid is avoid being sucked into retail and e-com strategies. The one piece of advice is your brand is absolutely every single thing you do in your clinic. So if you are copying other people's marketing and you're copying other people's branding, the moment you get people into your clinic, if you are not embodying what you say you do, they will not come back. So your branding is in every single thing you do. It's the moment people start to engage with you in online, on social media, drive past your clinic. But you are telling the world how you do things. You know, your marketing, your branding, your copy should be telling the world how you do things, who you are, why they should come in to see you. If you are copying that from another brand or another clinic, the moment people come into your clinic, they're going to smell bullshit. So your branding needs to be authentic. You need to have integrity with it. You need to be congruent with it and what you're offering. And when you have established your brand strategy for who you truly want to be and the business you truly want to create, that is when marketing becomes so effortless and it becomes so easy, because you're actually just sharing with the world your magic, your genius, and then the people that want that start to find their way into your clinic. You're no longer getting burnt out because you're not churning through patients. You're connecting with your lifelong patients, and your business begins to flow, but it starts with the strategy piece.
I love that. I love that. That's such great advice that I wish I had when I was a young and upcoming practitioner.
But it's hard, right? Because we're all following each other on Instagram.
Yeah.
I don't follow any Chinese medicine practitioners on Instagram. Not because I don't like them, but it just turns into an echo chamber. And so everybody's just posting what each other's posting. Everyone's just copying what everyone else is copying. So I'm not following other clinics on my Instagram. The people that I follow on Instagram are world-class brands. I'm learning from world-class brands, from, you know, people in New York in the wellness industry. You know, I want to learn from those people. I don't want to be an echo chamber of, you know, other local, you know, sort of clinics.
It's great advice. It's very similar to the idea of, you know, find people who have achieved what you want to achieve and hang out with them.
100%.
And you will become the sum of the five people who you spend the most time with. And I guess in that, you know, if you extrapolate that to who are you following on social media, what type of podcast do you listen to, that quality of content that you're exposing yourself to is either going to lift you up and elevate you to be able to be closer to your goals, or it's going to keep you where you are or even weigh you down.
Yeah, we all know junk food, but there's junk content and there's junk relationships. And so if all you're doing is consuming junk content, then exactly what you said, it'll bring you down. You want to be connecting with people who have done what you want to do or have elements of that. And I'm so grateful. My first job as a Chinese medicine practitioner was working at Mornington Chinese Medicine. So I never knew anything different but working in a clinic like that, which is where you're supported, where you're given development opportunities, where you're busy. And so I'm so lucky and I'm so grateful that I had that opportunity to work at MCM and since leaving MCM be mentored and coached by Kirst. But that was my normal. So I didn't know anything else. And so when I started over, that was, you know, the model was really, well, what did I learn at Mornington Chinese Medicine? You know, so to your point, the people that you spend the most time with, like, we're modeling them, we're using those people as our influencers. Like, the real influencers in our life are the people that we spend the most time with.
Yeah. To wrap up this amazing discussion, that we've had today, I'd love to tap into your money metaphor, Michelle. So for those who are listening, I don't know that we've discussed this before on the podcast. And one of the things that we have all, the three of us have all trained in NLP with Amy Bell. And so we've been introduced to this idea of metaphors. And we, all of us, either consciously or unconsciously, have preconceived ideas of how the world works and how we approach the world. And these lenses that we look through the world through and that we approach the world with will colour our experience and our lived experience and the type of results that we will get when we're interacting with the world. And some people might consider this to be luck or destiny, but there's a certain element of it that's very much within our control. This idea of metaphors, it can be applied to anything that we do in our life. And one of the ways that's very relevant to today's discussion is our relationship with money. And we all have a metaphor internally in our mind that really plays out when we're interacting with money and we're in financial situations. And so we can talk about this as being a money metaphor, and that when we think about money, when we think about earning money, when we think about how we spend it, how we accumulate it, how we might lose it, like all of these ideas that we have in this relationship that we have with money can be described by a money metaphor. If there's anything else you wanted to add to that, feel free, but I'd love to hear about your money metaphor, Michelle.
Yeah, so I've come up with a new thing recently, but Amy told me it's not really a metaphor for how I make money. It's more about a relationship that I have. But my metaphor for making money is I did live in Dubai. I lived in the UAE for many, many years. And so my money metaphor is a sandstorm. And I don't know if you've ever seen a sandstorm. Most people have probably seen Mission Impossible, so they probably think that's what it's like. But it truly is, it's beautiful to see, but it is this, you know, the beautiful red sand swirling and swirling and swirling and then coming in. And I imagine that is a money metaphor. My money metaphor is that it's a desert sandstorm that just grows and grows and grows and gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And the bigger it comes over me, that's when money sort of arrives into my life. But most recently, my relationship to spending money, I'm really proud of this metaphor. I love it. So I have quite an abundant mindset in spending money and my ability to invest in particular things. You know, investing in my personal development, things like that. And that is when you go to the cinema. And I don't know anyone who's ever finished a big box of popcorn from the cinema. And so you go to the cinema and you get your big box of popcorn and you're watching the movie and you're just eating the popcorn and you're not even thinking, not even 1% of your brain ever thinks, shit, is there enough popcorn in this bucket? Like the popcorn in that bucket does not end. Like the limit does not exist. And so you're just eating and it's all good because there's always enough for you. It's always there. There's always going to be enough for you. So that's another metaphor that I've been working with lately.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. And I know yours.
Sorry, I missed that. What did you say?
I said, I know yours.
Yes. Yeah. One of my metaphors, my money button, which is a very cool money button that anytime I need more money, I press a button and then the money appears.
But what I love is that it's ecological in the sense that the ways in which you then go about creating the income and the money is by being of service.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The making money is inherently attached to executing on some kind of stored value and then presenting that value to the world. So it's like a limitless store of value that I have access to. And then in sharing that with the world, then the money comes rolling in. I've recently, I've been collecting money metaphors from lots of different people in my life in the last 12 to 18 months and getting some input into how I might create some different money metaphors. And a very cool one that I like from a friend of mine is that whenever there's something that they want, no matter how much it might be or no matter how much it might cost, they always have enough money for it. So similar to your popcorn metaphor, and they their money metaphor is that money's like a river and you can just go down to the river at any time and you just get the money because the money's just there.
Love that.
But, and I like that one too because the money doesn't run out. It's a river and there's always plenty of...
The river's flowing.
River's flowing always. And anyone can access it. Anyone can walk down to the river and get all the money they need for the things that they want and need.
And I love that you mentioned that, you know, your money metaphor evolves and shifts and changes. I was at a conference where Sahail was speaking and he mentioned this concept of having a homeostatic point for wealth. So just like the body comes into homeostasis and, you know, your homeostatic weight might be 60 kilos and you're never really going to go too far beyond that, right, above and below. And we have a homeostatic point for wealth as well. And that concept just blew my mind because I realized for the last 5 years before hearing him speak, my homeostatic point was 100 grand. Some years I'd earn a little bit more, a little bit less. And then hearing that you could change your homeostatic point for wealth just shattered any form of reality or truth that I thought I had around money. And that's something that I, you know, continue to play with and shift as well. So it grows and evolves.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's a big piece that I guess to sum up from today and even to circle back to the very start with mindset that, you know, for so many of us, we as practitioners, we could do well with an upgrade to our homeostatic wealth point. And like the example practitioner that you use where she was saying that she'd be happy earning 75,000 and you were kind of like, well, maybe be happy with 175,000 and could be a really good homeostatic wealth point to get the type of lifestyle that you want and to get the type of chi flowing in your life that allows there to be an equal flow in your clinic world and in your professional life.
Yeah, and your patients will likely be better off for it.
I love that. Any parting words of wisdom or anything that you want to mention that we haven't mentioned yet? We've got your branding seminar and your networking seminar that we'll link to in the show notes, which I think are great resources that practitioners would be crazy to miss. What else would you like us to know before we wrap?
I think the No Network, which I launched earlier this year, it's really just been a labor of love and something that I've wanted to do to give back to our community. I could see people that I went to uni with that, you know, just don't have the same skill set that I do in business and marketing, and they're my mates and I want to see them do well in their career. So that's really how it all started. So the Know Your Brand seminar is in Sydney on the 31st of May, the 1st of June, the 2nd of June. So it's a 3-day seminar. You can choose to do the first 2 days and add on the third day. The third day is all about personal branding. So some people, it might not be relevant to them. And then offering one-on-one business coaching as well. You can find out that through my website, which is michellesmithhealth.com. But my parting advice would be to meet yourself with grace. If you feel like you don't quite have the business skill sets and you're not quite nailing it as an entrepreneur, ask yourself, have I set myself up for success here? The likely answer is no. And you're not meant to know all of this stuff. You have to learn it. So if you're feeling lost in business and you are feeling like you're lacking a sense of clarity when it comes to your business, meet yourself with grace. These are learned skills. So you can learn how to run a business. Seek out mentors. Seek out people that have walked the road before you and that you can sort of, emulate what they've done. And feel free to connect with me online. I love yapping. So you can send me a message on Instagram or send me an email, and I'm pretty good at responding.
Great. Thank you. And we will link to those other resources as well that you mentioned. So we'll link to your seminars. We'll link to your website. We'll link to Kirsten Wolf's Business Academy. We'll link to Stephen Bartlett's podcast. We'll link to Daniel Priestley's online resources. Any other business resources that that are in your sort of top three or top five, we can add those as well.
I mean, Kirsten's Business of Acupuncture course truly, it set up my systems in that first year of practice in a way that I didn't quite understand at the time I needed, but doing that course was really fundamental. So I can't recommend that one highly enough. And I'm just trying to think what else. If I think of any, I will send them through. But listening to different podcasts, like listening to Mel Robbins, Stephen Bartlett, Daniel Priestley, if I think of anything else, then I'll share them. But they're the main ones I go to.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Michelle.
Thanks, Claire. Thanks, Jack.
Thank you.
I got to run. So thank you both so much. But any other time you want to do a podcast, I'll chat till the cows come home about anything business marketing related.
Amazing. Thanks, Michelle.
No worries. I'll see you later.
Thank you. Bye.